Welcome. I'd like to call our meeting to order this evening for the Oro Valley Town Council regular and study session, May 3rd, 2023. Ms. Stein, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Here.
Councilmember Bowen?
Here.
Councilmember Green? Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Here.
Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
And Mayor Winfield?
Here. We have six of seven council members present. If you would please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Ms. Stein will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Water Utility Commission will hold a study session on May 5th at 1 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The Water Utility Commission will meet again on May 8th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will hold a special session on May 9th at 6 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The Town Council will hold a budget study session on May 10th and May 11th at 5 p.m. in the council chambers. There will be a neighborhood meeting for the rezone and development plan for Vistoso Highlands Drive on May 15th at 6 p.m. in the council chambers. The May 16th Parks and Recreation Advisory Board meeting has been canceled. A neighborhood meeting regarding a general plan amendment and rezoning request for Moore Loop and East Rancho Vistoso Boulevard will be held on May 17th at 6 p.m. in the council chambers. The Stormwater Utility Commission will hold their next meeting on May 18th at 4 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The May 23rd Board of Adjustment meeting has been canceled. And then the next Town Council regular session is scheduled for May 24th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Stein. We'll go to Council Reports. Council Member Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is my last appeal for Project Grad. By the time I'm back in council meeting, the event will have occurred. And I am asking you to please support our young people in this event. They're still very short of volunteers. I will be there volunteering myself. And I hope to see you all and those that are within the realm of my voice. These are our young people, and I'm asking you, please come out and support them so that they have a safe, safe graduation.
Thank you, Councilmember Jones-Ivy. Other reports this evening? I would like to, since our last council meeting, we had the Employee Earth Day. A number of employees gathered at the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve and rolled up their sleeves and removed, about 60 45-gallon bags of buffalo grass. So we appreciate all those who participated. Also, our police department had an awards ceremony that recognized the accomplishments of several of our officers who saved the lives of a number of individuals. Two officers for, I think, 2021-2022, Officer of the Year, Mike Duran for 2022. I apologize, I've forgotten the officer for 2021.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. It would have been Sergeant Nate Vera.
Okay, thank you. So that was a wonderful event, and we appreciate all those that helped to make that happen. So hearing no other council reports, we'll go to Mr. Cornelison. We'll present his report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have one brief report since it pertains to one of the presentations this evening regarding our Youth Advisory Council. So this Saturday, May 6th, our Oro Valley Youth Advisory Council will be putting on a free workshop here in the Town Council Chambers. From 2 to 3 p.m. on how to get a job It's open to teenagers and their parents or legal guardians, and it will be taught by a financial advisor with over 20 years' experience. So we encourage anybody who is interested or might know somebody who is interested to please attend. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Cornelison. The agenda will remain as posted. We'll go to call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, Mayor and Council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. Those coming to the podium, if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley. Anthony Ferrara.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council members. My name is Anthony Ferrara, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. If it comes before you, I encourage you to vote no on the rezone proposed by the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. The land that they purchased was a residential piece of property, and it should remain a residential piece of property. The proposed project is not compatible with the neighborhood, and if possible, I'd love your help in encouraging them to find a more compatible location for the project. Thank you.
Devin Sloan.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Devin Sloan, and I have lived in Catalina Shadows for over, 24 years next month. The Oro Valley Historical Society was surprised to learn about two events that are being held next week at the historic Steam Pump Ranch property. Parents' Night Out on May 12th and Family Camping on May 13th. Cool concepts for the town to sponsor. However, why at our most historical landmark? Why not at any of our larger, more family-oriented parks in Oro Valley? Riverfront Park, which much larger grassy area, small trail, and a little playground. Or James Creek Park, with again, much larger grassy area, trails, playground. Or the major park in Oro Valley, where we're spending a ton of money, Naranja, which has even larger grassy area, trails, and playgrounds. Steam Pump Ranch was placed on the National Register of Historic Places based on the sense of place it provides to all of us. There's no playground and only a small grassy area surrounded by a historic home, a barbecue area under reconstruction, and two small buildings that are being reconstituted as restrooms. There's fencing around these buildings to protect citizens and the buildings. It doesn't seem like the perfect place to have family activities. In the Cultural Heritage and Preservation Plan of 2015, it is noted that Steam Pump Ranch is an important part of the town's heritage and that a primary concern in the future is the protection of the historic core at the ranch. It also states that partnerships will be a key element in maintenance of the property and providing public access. The Oro Valley Historical Society would have been thrilled to be a part of either or both of these two town activities, providing some historical and cultural aspect of the ranch if we'd been included as a partner. We specialize in edutaining. Perhaps a short story about the ranch, the people who lived there, how they changed the scope of our area in the 1800s. We weren't informed about these two events, however. It's our hope that the town will reconsider the types of activities that are held at Steam Pump Ranch to include the Historical Society in future events, like the Parents' Night Out in June or the Camp Out in October, and will consider maintaining the integrity of our most visible historic core in accordance with state and national guidelines. They didn't have real playgrounds when George Push lived on the property, but we have them now in our three parks. Let's use the parks as the family gathering place for parents and kids and truly allow the Historical Society to partner with the town to inform, preserve, and protect our history. Thank you very much.
David Divert.
My name is David Iver. I'm a Oral Valley resident. Thank you for your time. The Oral Valley Church of Nazarene, as you're all aware of, wants to get approval for rezoning and construction on a property they purchased in 2020. Their plan includes building a sports complex and amphitheater with activities year-round, continuously, and late in the evening. My wife and I live on West Cayey Concordia and resided there for about 26 years. We've seen a huge change in the neighborhood because of expansion of the church and their arrogance that they can do whatever they want. Their arrogance includes trying to coerce the city into approving their plan based on the argument that a sports complex is a religious activity. It is not. By definition, sports is a form of recreation and physical activity engaged in for pleasure. It is not for indoctrination to teach the beliefs or doctrines of a particular group. Their arrogance also includes no consideration for the neighbors or for the safety of the public. One example is the church taking over the right-of-way on both Cayey Concordia and Cayey Buena Vista. On Cayey Concordia, they run their golf carts up and down the right-of-way as if they own it. At a recent event, they ran several golf carts with passengers up and down the right-of-way, including the sidewalk, continuously for hours. Some pedestrians not involved in the activity were forced off the walkway and right-of-way. On Cayey Buena Vista, it is the norm on Sunday and during other events for a large number of attendees to park on the right-of-way. Vehicles parked on the right-of-way include those parking on the corner, creating a significant safety hazard for vehicles and pedestrians by blocking the view of oncoming traffic and pedestrians at Cayey Concordia and Cayey Buena Vista intersection. The right-of-way is part of the buffer area between the church property and the neighbors. Thus, using the right-of-way for their own use infringes on the quality of life for the neighborhood residents and the safety of the public. At a meeting with a member of the city's planning and zoning committee several years ago concerning the church 2018 expansion, an official made the comment, "The city hasn't figured out how to deal with mega churches when it comes to parking and effect on the neighborhood. I think it's time to figure it out by holding them to the same standards as other enterprises. This includes now allowing the request for rezoning and building a sports complex that will further diminish the quality of life for the neighbors. The bottom line is this is a historic residential agricultural neighborhood established many, many years before the intrusion." Thank you.
Richard Farash.
Good evening, Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, and esteemed council. First, thank you for your service. I know you put in a lot of long hours and hard work. My name is Richard Furash. I am a 31-year resident of Oro Valley. 6 weeks ago, a pedestrian, a teenager, and her pet were killed in a tragic motor vehicle accident. I was surprised that the town council didn't take a moment of silence in her honor. So I would like to take a few minutes, a few seconds of my time right now, to just have a moment of silence for her. Thank you, guys. The teen was killed in the area of Nevada Drive that is near the new park entrance. If you've visited that area, if you've ridden your bicycle there, if you've walked there, and I have many times, you know that it is an inherently dangerous area for pedestrian traffic. And there are many reasons why. A speed limit of 45 miles an hour is far too fast for an area where there are pedestrians likely crossing into a park. The area lacks marked pedestrian crosswalks, so drivers have no visual clue as to where they might cross or where people might be crossing. And pedestrians have no idea as to where they may safely cross. There is absolutely no pedestrian access to the park for someone walking on the north side of Naranja Drive, east of the park entrance, because the town paved over the park, the road shoulder that was there, so that cars could easily enter the park in that direction. Indeed, they did such a wonderful job paving that they paved over an unmarked crosswalk from Guava Drive. As you know, by law, every intersection has three crosswalks. Guava intersects with Narada, so there's a crosswalk, and it goes right where cars are exiting off to get to the park. There's no sign in the area telling pedestrians in the area where they can cross over safely and how they can get into the park. And there are no signs warning motorists that there is pedestrian traffic likely to be in the area. We as a council, we as a town, really have done nothing to mitigate the risk to pedestrians at this point. Only the police department has done something visible by posting two, and I'm going to call them speed meters. I don't know exactly what they are, but they're something like that. And by increased patrols in the area. But neither of these actions address the fundamental issue of danger to pedestrians. And I only have a couple of seconds, so I'll close quickly, I guess. But it's very easy and very cheap for the council to fix this problem, and they can do so right now. If I may just finish for a second, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, sir. A couple of marked crosswalks, marked, so people know where to go. Some signs to tell pedestrians where to go. A change in the speed limit in the area, like you would in something like a speed zone, a school zone, I mean, would make a huge difference. And you could do so. You don't have to go through warrants and all kinds of other kinds of things to get it done. And I know you guys love our town. You work hard for it. I know Project Grad. I know all the work you do. I'm just asking you to please, as a council, take a look at this and see if there isn't something you can do to make that place more safe for pedestrians. And again, thank you for all your hard work. We appreciate it very much.
Howard Richmond.
Well, good evening. My name's Howard Richmond. I live in 13140 North Corsair Drive up in the air park. And I came here, this is the first time I've been here since I emerged from my COVID cave a while back. And so it's a pleasure being here. I want to do three things tonight. The first is I came to thank you all. I appreciate what you do, and my friends do, and my family does. And I think sometimes we're remiss at not acknowledging the hard work that you and all your people do. So thank you. Second thing, it's been a long time. I wanted to acknowledge the terrific roundabout you guys put up at the end of La Cañada and Moore. It's been a while, but I haven't been able to come down and say thank you. Beautifully designed, beautifully implemented by the town staff, on time, on budget. Well done. Thank you very much. Third thing I want to talk about is internet. Up where in the northwest part of Oro Valley, we're classified by the FCC as a underserved area. Actually, I think of it more as an internet desert. We have limited internet access. You have DSL, but that's limited. We don't get fiber because only the new developments get fiber, and CenturyLink, nobody's going to put fiber in. So the real solution for us is cellular, is 5G, and the fact that T-Mobile, AT&T, Verizon, they all have services to extend the internet out into the rural areas, into the homes. And you can look at the speeds. You can see what it's like. What I'm asking you all to do, would like the town to do, is to be proactive in trying to come up with sites that would be potential that we could invite the carriers to come in and bid and propose improving the cellular service. Right now, it's kind of reactive. I've been talking to them. You know, the town waits until a carrier calls, and they look, and they say, no, I would just like if we could be more proactive and see if we can work together to get things done. And if we can, I'm more than willing to help out and provide legwork and grunt work to make this this thing happen. So thank you all very much.
Tim Terrace.
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, Council and staff, thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Tim Terrace. I am an Oro Valley resident. I live directly across the street to the west from the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. I'm here to oppose their request to rezone their R-144 property to a planned area development. Recently, the applicant has been touting the impact of their initiative on the neighborhood based on the Concordia Buena Vista Group's use of the word impact. They have proudly stated that their efforts produced 4,000 attendees to events from Ash Wednesday, Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, a Saturday Easter egg roll, and three services on Sunday. First, I have a definition of extrapolation. Extrapolation is a statistical technique aimed at inferring the unknown from the known. It attempts to predict future data by relying on historical data. In our example, we will use the applicant's 10,000 hours per year predicted usage. If they operate at their predicted levels, then 52 weeks in a year would result in 208,000 attendees a year. That is over four times the population of Oro Valley. All of this would occur in a 1.5 square mile area in our residential neighborhood. Fortunately, from 10 p.m. until 6 a.m., it should be quiet because the attendees have left and gone to their homes, mostly outside of the immediate area. That is a huge amount of activity and would exceed CDO High School and the OV Aquatic Center many times over, both in sheer numbers and intensity. Please keep in mind this when you consider the project for the real and permanent impact it will have on the town and the neighborhood. Thank you. Oh yes, one final thought. Just remember, behind every great man is a woman rolling her eyes. Thank you.
Doug Dalby.
Good evening, and thank you for what you do. My name is Doug Dalby. I am an Oro Valley resident, and I'm opposed to the rezoning request for the property on Calle Concordia that the OVCN has acquired. Reading through some of the information that has been published concerning this rezoning request, I'm not sure what the correct adjective should be to describe the OVCN from the neighbor's perspective, but deceitful, deceptive, arrogant, and nuisances are a few that come to mind. In an Explorer article, Pastor Coulter was quoted as saying that, quote, "We have been kind and gracious. I have sat through three different presentations of the church's proposed project and listened to them declare to the audience in each of those that they have had neighborhood meetings concerning their project. My property touches OVCN's property, and I've never been contacted by the church for any reason. Deceitful." In that same article, when Paul Olin, the developer, was asked if OVCN had, quote, "looked at other properties that might be more compatible with this use," close quote, his answer was no. When considering a project of this size in a rural residential neighborhood without considering other locations, arrogant comes to mind. This project does not meet Oro Valley's threshold for compatibility with regard to light, noise, traffic, and it does not align with the town's general plan. Yet they have persisted for 2.5 years with opposition from 100% of the adjoining neighbors. Nuisance. When talked to other Oro Valley residents and explaining a proposed project and a location where the 75,000 square foot commercial building, football field with 70 foot lights, and a desired 10,000 hours operation a year is to be located, I have never had anyone that thinks this makes sense. Please help OVCN find an appropriate location for this huge project and vote no on the rezone. Thank you.
Devin Smith.
Good evening, Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor, and members of the Town Council. I am a resident of Oro Valley, and our family has a home on Calle El Milagro. We remain strongly opposed to the OVCN rezone. Many of us have spoken multiple times on this issue over the past years, and our concerns have not changed, and they have not lessened in any way. Quite simply, the traffic, lights, construction, and noise, and the entire rezoning project are all incompatible with our beautiful and historic neighborhood. This rezone causes a huge safety concern for our family, my children, the rest of my neighbors, and that's what it is. There are other options, and I implore that they be explored by the church and the city in order to preserve our neighborhood. I'd like to thank you all for continuing to listen to our concerns on this issue and to listen to our opposition of the rezone. Thank you.
I have no other blue cards this evening. I'm going to close a call to the audience and go to the next agenda item, which is presentations. Ms. Stein, presentation one.
Presentation of graduating youth advisory council members.
Constituent Services Coordinator Jessica Hind will present this item. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor, members of council. Bring this down a little more. I am pleased to be here this evening to recognize our 2023 outgoing members of the Oral Valley Youth Advisory Council. Unfortunately, due to their end-of-year school events, our outgoing seniors are not in attendance this evening. However, I still wanted to acknowledge their passion for our community and their service to the Youth Advisory Council. First, I would like to thank you all for your continued support and the provided opportunities you have given to the group as they continue to expand their presence within our community. The Youth Advisory Council's mission is to develop the voices of the Oral Valley's youth and channel their passions to enhance our community. They aim to bridge gaps in the community by creating and participating in service projects and to serve as a voice for the youth in local government. Over the years, this young group of individuals have hosted technology classes for their senior community while also having the senior community teach them a few things about pickleball. They have held dive-in movie nights during the summer, Halloween movie nights, hosted booths during town events, and partnered with Interfaith Community Services to sponsor families and elderly individuals during the winter holidays. In addition to their service projects, they have learned about the importance of municipal government with their invitation to participate in the executive town manager's search and the general plan engagement process. Having worked closely with each of these young adults, I can attest to their dedication and love for our community, and it has been a pleasure to work with them over the past few years. I will now list the outgoing members' names, the high school that they're graduating from, and the university they will be attending this fall. From Canyon del Oro and our outgoing Youth Advisory Council president, Elena Hendricks will be attending the Honors College at the University of Arizona. Vincent Ferrara from Canyon del Oro, and I've been advised tonight that he's also been named valedictorian for Canyon del Oro, he'll be attending the University of Michigan. Lauren Ernzen from Canyon del Oro will be attending Colorado School of Mines. Ryan Russell from Canyon del Oro will be attending the University of Colorado Boulder. Alexei Mendez from Basis will be attending Carleton College. And Matthew Kim from Basis will be attending Cornell University. Samir Sandu from Basis will be attending the University of Arizona in the Accelerated Pathway to Medical Education program. And Brooke Taylor from Ironwood Ridge has not finalized her decision between Grand Canyon or Arizona State University. So thank you for allowing me this opportunity to represent the seniors of the graduating Youth Advisory Council members. Thank you.
Jessica, we appreciate the support that you give our Youth Advisory Council. I've not attended a Youth Advisory Council event that you have not been present, and so the time and your commitment to these young people is greatly appreciated, and their participation in the general plan process and the our town manager process was greatly appreciated, so thank you. Ms. Stein, presentation two.
Proclamation, Kids to Parks Day.
Okay, it's my pleasure this evening to read the following proclamation, and then I'll present this to our Parks and Recreation Director, Christy Diaz-Trahan. This is Kids to Parks Day, May 20th, 2023, whereas May 20th, 2023 is the 13th Kids to Parks Day organized and launched by the National Park Trust, held annually on the third Saturday of May. And whereas Kids to Parks Day empowers kids and encourages families to get outdoors and visit local parks, public lands, and waters, and whereas we should encourage children to lead a more active lifestyle to combat issues of childhood obesity, diabetes, and hypertension, and whereas Kids to Parks Day will broaden children's appreciation for nature and outdoors, and whereas Kids to Parks Day will recognize the importance of recreating responsibly while enjoying the benefits of the outdoors. Now, therefore, I, Joseph C. Winfield, Mayor of Oral Valley, do hereby proclaim May 20th, 2023 as Kids to Parks Day and encourage residents of Oral Valley to make time to show the children in their lives a neighborhood, state, or national park on this day. So Ms. Christy Diaz-Trahan.
I'm not sure which one to use. Mayor, Council, thank you. And thank you for taking the time to recognize Kids for Parks. It's integral to the foundation of who we are as human beings. And so in anticipation of this accepting this evening, I did a quick Google search and looked up the benefits of play outside. And Harvard Health has 6 items identified: sunshine, exercise, executive function, taking risks, and socialization. And then I went to Little Tykes, right? And they have learning through play, physical benefits, social development, emotional impact, promotes imagination, and makes education fun. In Oral Valley, perhaps not as astute as Harvard or as development-focused as Little Tykes, I think we're doing a pretty good job. Our mission is inspire connection through recreation, connecting people to people. If you have been to a park and a playground or a ball field, kids connect with each other instantly. They make friends, they make buddies, they play tag, they dig for bugs, they're connecting. The next one is connecting people to nature. Again, kids are out there digging for bugs and climbing trees and finding every little mud puddle they can find to play in. They're connecting with nature. And lastly, connecting to their community. While kids may not recognize or connecting to their community, kids get to parks with adults. So parents, siblings, aunts and uncles, and they are connecting to their community by being in a park, by sitting in a ball game and watching all of the kids follow the soccer ball together. They're connecting. They're connecting at farmers markets and at events. So as it relates to Kids to Parks Day, inspiring connection through recreation, we're nailing it. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate all that you do, Christy, to support the Parks and Recreation program. And yeah, thank you. And Mr. Ferrar, I meant earlier, I presume that was your son.
That's my son.
Yeah. So we want. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. Very proud.
Yeah. As you should be. We'll go to the consent agenda. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 6-0. We'll go to the regular agenda. Ms. Stein, first item.
Discussion and possible action regarding the potential expansion of the town's school resource officer program.
So this item was requested by Councilmember Solomon and Councilmember Green, and Councilmember Solomon will present this item this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Police Chief Kara Riley has some information that was requested at the last council meeting, and after she presents that based on the information she's providing, I'm going to make a proposed amendment to the motion that's on the floor.
Thank you, Councilmember Solomon.
Sure. Chief. Thank you. Well, good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. As requested by Council, I focused on the two areas that were the direction given to me by you, and I just want to read that specifically, which would be the policy that would make it a requirement that any school in the town of Oro Valley with 200 students or more have their security plans reviewed and receive input by the police department. And the second was all costs associated with the SRO program would be provided a cost analysis of 50% of services provided for that school. So over the last several weeks, I've taken the opportunity to speak with Amphitheater School District Superintendent Todd Yeager, which really he holds the most of our customers in our school with our public schools. And then I also took the opportunity to speak with Carrie. Just a minute, I'm going to get this right. Eric Carey with Lehman, since we are in talks with them in regards to having a school resource officer there because of the population growth that's occurred at that school. And when I reviewed this proposal with both of them, they, of course, did not have any objections to it. They understand that it brings best practices. But the one thing that I did not have on my original presentation that I think is imperative that you all be aware of, and it's certainly in my write-up, but I do think the community should be aware of, is that one thing that the police department does is we also engage our emergency manager with the town. I like to refer to him as a hidden gem. He is a wonderful wealth of knowledge and resource. He probably won't like the fact that I just said that. But anyway, but he is a great resource that we work with hand in hand every day. And so it's something that I also spoke with him about, and he's wanting to also become more involved with the review of emergency plans, emergency responses for any of our schools. But frankly, we also do that for any of our businesses as well. So that was the in-depth that I did. Again, there was overall support. Through this, one topic that did come up that may be up for discussion tonight is I don't necessarily think we even need to put a percentage perhaps on what we notify the schools about in regards to our cost. We could even just put out, in essence, our budget that we have towards our schools. But in any school that comes to us for a reference to review emergency plans, in any manner, as we do with anybody that would want to come to us, we would review it and give our input. So that's really my update for you all tonight.
Thank you, Chief.
I look forward to the discussion.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, so based on the input from the chief then, I'm going to move to amend the motion. Basically, the original motion will become the item 2 of the new motion. So just everyone can have a full starting point. So the new motion, or I move to amend, is I move that Oro Valley adopt the following policy. Every school in Oro Valley with an enrollment of 200 or more students shall, 1, have the Oro Valley Police Department and Emergency Response Planner annually review and provide input to their security and emergency plans. Number 2, have a school resource officer or other alternative security approved by the Oro Valley Police Department. Oro Valley shall request a reimbursement from each school for the cost of the Oro Valley provided SRO.
Can you repeat that, Councilmember Solomon?
Yes, happy to. I move that Oro Valley adopt the following policy. Every school in Oro Valley with an enrollment of 200 or more students shall, one, have the Oro Valley Police Department and Emergency Response Planner annually review and provide input to their security and emergency plans. Number two, have a school resource officer or other alternative security approved by the Oro Valley Police Department. Oro Valley shall request a reimbursement from each school for the cost of the Oro Valley provided SROs.
So Councilmember Solomon shall request, was there a percentage or what was the last?
No, based on a chief's recommendation, we just removed the percentage and just said we request a reimbursement.
Okay. Second, discussion's sake. So questions, discussion? Okay, Vice Mayor. Well, I have, so in the motion, Councilmember Solomon, you say that with an enrollment of 200 plus, what's the, can you explain the rationale behind 200?
Yes, that came from the chief, and she can provide more input on that.
You know, we don't have any specific numbers that I would say is best practice. We are, to avoid publicly discussing our population in our schools, this would be something that would be kind of just a minimum. But as I've said in the past, we want to review any request that comes into the agency. I don't necessarily know if there is a specific count that is best practice. I've researched it, and there is just not any best practice number, but that just seemed to be a reasonable number that came up.
Mr. Mayor?
Member Solomon?
Yeah, that was a thought I had, too, was did we want to put a number in there? And the one item was, well, what if somebody has a small preschool or other homeschool? So it was all of our current, quote, schools, public, private, charter schools, have enrollments above the 200 mark. But I'm certainly open up to discussions to whether we should have a minimum number in there or not. I was just trying to avoid any unintended consequences, although which may not be necessary, because this is just a policy. We're basically, as a town, saying we are concerned about the safety of our students in school, and that's where that number originated from.
Yeah, so what comes to mind as an example, I understand that Immaculate Heart, for example, currently has a student population of 196. As we know, right, so student populations are going
varies.
Mm-hmm. Varies from next year they may. So I would recommend that perhaps we not use a number, but I'm just using that as an example. Where the other, when we say every school shall in the council report, at least in the recommendation conclusion, it uses the should instead of shall. There was some discussion 2 weeks ago about if we have the authority to require private, this is every school, so that's private schools, charter schools, public schools, home schools.
Correct. Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Green, in talking with the town attorney, Jonathan Rothschild, it was recommended that we have case law does not give us any authority or any state funds that could go towards private schools. So I believe the wording he recommended would have been the second one that you said. I'm sorry.
Should.
Yeah.
I accept both of those as a friendly amendment. Okay. Changing the word shall to should and removing the 200 or more students. So it would be every school in Oro Valley with an enrollment of, every school in Oro Valley should.
Other questions, Vice Mayor? And then Council Member Jones-Ivy?
What is the definition of school?
Well, I would have to look up the specific definition. Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, there is a wild different definitions, a lot of different definitions nowadays. Keep in mind, we also have the University of Arizona in our community as well. So there is a lot of different varieties that we have to deal with in regards to schools. So right now for us, we provide school resource officers in the public, all elementary, middle school, and high school.
Okay. And then do we have any idea what the fiscal impact of this policy would be? I mean, you gave us an overview of the cost of each school resource officer, but do we have a number for how many we would be adding if we were to, I mean, how many more schools do we have, and what would that definition of schools be? Because there are schools, Arizona has a really broad school system with charter schools, homeschools, hybrid schools, private schools, public schools, partially funded public schools, partial schools where you can just go for a class. There's the vet school. There are preschools.
Sure.
I feel like we would need to know what schools we're talking about and how many that would be.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, the way that I interpret the request for the policy is if they define themselves as a school, they should provide us as a should. They should. It's recommended that they provide us their emergency plans. We review that with them and engage them with them. In regards to the reimbursement, I don't think that's to me, the reimbursement is just notice of cost. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to get reimbursed. And so I can tell you we have how many schools we have in our community, but to your point, there are some that are homeschools that we aren't aware of. It's going to be up to them to define them, to decide if they want to do that.
They even have these little charter schools that have like 10 kids in a home that are funded by the state, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
So there's a lot of different schools. But I don't think there's any concern about having us annually review and provide input to those emergency plans. I think that's something we're already doing, and having a policy that states that that's what we're doing and that's best practices is an excellent idea. I think the part is tricky that says that they should have an SRO or other alternative security. And that's where I feel like we would need a little more definition as to what we're talking about.
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
You know, about every week we read about a school shooting. I don't think the parents of the children in those schools are concerned about the definition of, quote, school. That's kind of like the definition of what's a cat, what's a dog. I really think that's getting down to some nitpicking here. We're talking about the safety of our children, and we now want to ask for a definition of a school. The old saying, if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, sounds like a duck, it's a duck. All these places have the name school after them. They come to us, in the cases of charter schools, for approval as schools. I really don't think this is something you want to get hung up in on some minor technicalities. I mean, that was one of the reasons for the 200 student threshold. I obviously, it sounds like that was too high. We could always go back to saying something like 50 or so, which would obviously rule out any type of homeschooling. But this has been continued once already, and this should be, I would think, a pretty obvious policy that this council would want, considering we were some of the leaders in putting school resource officers into our schools to keep our children safe. And just over the last 10 to 15 years when we started this, the situation has deteriorated dramatically as far as the number of unfortunate events occurring in our schools. And, you know, the town had committed a long time ago that we were going to spend the money from the town that the school districts or other schools wouldn't or said they couldn't to provide safety to our students in Oro Valley. So I just don't think this is something that we really need to be continuing on and on for the definition of, quote, what a school is. That doesn't seem to be. Let's just come out and.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a policy that you proposed, Councilmember Solomon. So, I mean, partly the question is for you in terms of what the definition of school is. And
it's self-evident as far as I'm concerned what a school is. Okay. I don't think anyone in this community is arguing over the definition of what a school is.
Sorry, Councilmember Solomon. I believe Vice Mayor Barrett had the floor.
Mr. Mayor, if I might also add, in regards to the funding costs, Mr. Mayor and Council, one thing that I learned about on Friday at the Arizona Association Chiefs of Police is that the grant funding from the state has increased significantly for school resource officer programs throughout our state. And so I think that we're move in the right direction in regards to some of the grants that we have applied for the future. And I also think that there's lots more opportunities coming for this program in the future as well. For our community. In the past, because we have such a low crime rate, we weren't eligible. And so I do think that there are some really great future opportunities that that are upon us and more to come. So I just wanted to make sure that you are aware of that as well.
Thank you, Chief. Okay, so how about Councilmember Jones Ivey, and then we'll come back to Vice Mayor.
If indeed we decide to adopt a policy that every school with whatever number of students has to have their plan reviewed by our chief and the emergency response planner, who would ultimately take responsibility for making sure that schools are following our policy?
Mr. Mayor, Councilwoman Joyce Jones-Ivey, that would actually probably fall under me. We do this anyway throughout the year. It's one of our best practices that we do. Where I think this will benefit us of having that extra set of resources looking at it as well with us collaboratively as we push forward. As you know, policing every day is evolving. And different resources are constantly coming up. And so it's just something that I think that this will allow for a formalizing what we do.
So as new schools come in, whether they're public, private, charter, whatever, it would be your department that would be responsible for making sure they have the policy and making sure that they're following the policy and establishing an emergency plan.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivey, it's what we would recommend on best practices. It's similar to what we partner with economic development when it comes to new businesses. We offer all these different resources. It's kind of just a grocery store of choices that they can choose from. And so it's very similar to that, where we would engage the school coming in, finding out how much population we're expecting, the traffic plan, different things, type of things that we provide as that automatic resource. And so I would be responsible for ensuring that's in compliance.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Vice Mayor.
What do other jurisdictions do in our neighboring areas in terms of funding for the school resource officers? not necessarily in terms of providing them, but do they receive reimbursement? Is that typical or common?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, I'm going to pull the polls of the people, tell you about who I've spoken to over the last couple of weeks. So Sarita Police Department, percentage, they have school resource officers in their high schools only. And so I'm just making sure I get the jurisdictions right in my head. And it's about a 50-50, 45-55, I believe, split between the school district and the town of Sarita. Marana, very similar, except theirs is 75-25. Marana pays the 25% out of their salary, or the town of Marana, but the rest is funded through the school district through a grant. And the reason they don't fund during the summer is they do not fund for summer break, where in our community, especially after COVID, we have had to have summer school, even in our elementary schools, which is very unusual. So we do provide a police officer there for that.
Okay, thanks. And I just want to go briefly back to the definition. I know this is a tempting subject to become emotional about, but, you know, I send my babies into our school every day. And so it's meaningful to me. But I also know that in Arizona, the way our education system is set up, we do have a lot of different types of schools. And that's unique mm-hmm. in Arizona. Not every state has that. In many states, it may be more self-evident. These are the public schools. These are the private schools that you have. But that's why I'm wondering if, you know, as part of it, we should have some type of, you know, K-12 or, you know, K-12, I don't know, whether saying public, charter, et cetera, since we can't really put the second piece on private schools or require them otherwise to comply. So I don't know if maybe there's a way that we could accomplish the same goal while not being, you know, overly confusing regarding these micro schools that are all over Arizona.
Councilmember Solomon and Councilmember Nicholson.
You can let Josh hasn't spoken yet.
Yeah, I was just curious, what's the funding structure right now? Like, do the schools have to pay anything right now, or do they pay a portion now, or is it 50%?
So, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, right now we receive about $58,000 with an increase of $25,000 coming to us from AMFI. So maybe $85,000-ish from AMFI. And then we are gotten some positive information for the Lehman School Resource Officer, but nothing confirmed yet in writing. That grant, and I cannot tell you what the amount that we may receive from the state, but the grant I wrote for that Lehman wrote for was going to be for the about $175,000. We're averaging about $212,000, and I'm giving you best guess. It varies with time on as the police officer, retirements, benefits. So right now we receive less than a police officer reimbursement. But as I said, we're very hopeful because of the new funding coming down for some reimbursement in the future. For existing school resource officers. What they focused on this past year is new programs.
Okay. What is the, so from the state, I'm not even familiar with it, how much, is it going to be every single year, or is this a one-year type thing, or how is the funding structured, and how much is it, and how much does that help us?
I'm going to phone a friend here in a second, because Commander Teachout, I believe, helped with that grant. Was that a three-year grant? Yeah, so just so everybody can hear it on the recording, a three-year grant each year would be that yearly request of $175,000 per se that we applied for through Lehman. So that'll be for over, each year would be another $175,000.
Okay, so it's $175,000 per town or jurisdiction, or how is that $175,000 doled out from the state?
It actually depends on the applicant and what they put in for the cost, because what a police officer gets paid in one jurisdiction is different than what a police officer gets paid in another. Yeah.
It's like per school. Per school, there's possibly $175,000 per year for 3 years.
Well, just for this one position we assisted with Lehman to apply for. That's it. And the reason we were able to look at that is because it's a new position. If you have current, we weren't so fortunate. You bet.
Councilmember Solomon?
Just a few reminders. One is that the town has been in the past paying for school resource officers at our schools, as we had decided as a community years ago that we thought that was extremely important, the safety of our children. This policy also says should, because we're aware of some of the legal obstacles to saying shall or to demand, particularly in a private school situation. We're also formalizing this now, and it also gives our chief more leverage in going to schools and discussing the security with them and potential reimbursements, and they're having a school resource officer, all once again an alternative type of security approved by it. And I think just, and I say this with all due respect, but Vice Mayor, you just mentioned you send your girls to school every day, so obviously you seem to know the definition of school because you send them there each day. So it's something that I get, and that's why I say with due respect, we use the term school quite often. And once again, I think the should resolves any potential issues with that.
So just to recap, or at least, Council Member Solomon, you have expressed a willingness for your motion to be amended. You began by saying every school shall 200 plus. Mm-hmm. What if it, and it can be a little bit challenging, right, at the dais to come up with the exact language, but perhaps rather than every school, what about schools should? I'm not sure what follows that should. Should seek the assistance of the Oro Valley Police Department for an annual review of their
emergency response plan.
Emergency response.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
I think that between yourself and some other comments, I think there we might have it, I suppose, as we'll say, with a number we can say every K to 12 mm-hmm. grade school in Oro Valley should, one, have the Oro Valley Police Department and emergency response planner annually review and provide input to their security and emergency plans, and two, have a school resource officer or other alternate security approved by the Oro Valley Police Department. Oro Valley shall request a reimbursement from each school for the cost of the Oro Valley provided SROs.
So that second is still a should have an SRO or other alternative.
Correct.
It's not a shall.
Correct.
It's not. And then the chief made a suggestion on, and instead of using the language shall request reimbursement, shall notify the costs of the SRO program to the schools. Are you amenable to that?
I did. Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
That's fine, but I don't know if we do we want to just notify, or do we want the ability to say, you know, we'd like you to participate in this. If they say no, we're not going to pull our SROs. So I don't know if there's any pros or cons with that. I don't know if the chief or yourself have any inputs on that.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, it's a yearly request that I do speak with the superintendent about the costs But also I seek out grant funding on any reimbursement we can get to alleviate what's put on the taxpayer. So, for example, you know, with Governor's Office of Highway Safety and so forth. So I can see where we could just be.
But you're requesting now is what you say.
I do request it, yes. I always ask.
Pardon? Vice Mayor?
I accept the idea of K-12 school because I think that's sufficiently sufficient that, you know, we kind of know what we're talking about. Organized schools that serve elementary to high school. I kind of like the request reimbursement because I think it gives a little bit more teeth to the reimbursement, and it also may encourage the schools to, for example, apply for grant funding that they may be deciding to not apply for because we're currently paying for it. So if we, you know, have that in there, there may be opportunities that could come forward in the future. So I think it's kind of the long game on that, like in a few years or as more grant funding is becoming available. But so I don't have an issue with should request reimbursement.
Okay.
Okay. Councilmember Nicholson?
I would be fine with just police chief being able to decide which schools are being considered for SRO2. Like, I don't know if we have to define it or say a number or a percentage, or, you know, I think Kara would have a pretty good idea of, like, there's a decent amount of kids in one congregational area. I think police chief be able to determine what schools need SRO, I'd be fine with that, and I think that solves a lot of any issues, maybe.
Vice Mayor?
I also think that's a good solution to the school question.
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
Well, it sounds like we have one amendment I'd like to make, friendly amendment to the motion, and that is that the first sentences after I move that Oro Valley adopt the following policies, that every K-12 school in Oro Valley should, and then there's items one, have the Oro Valley Police Department emergency response plan annual review and provide input to the security and emergency plans, and two, have a school resource officer or other alternative security approved by the Oro Valley Police Department. Oro Valley shall request reimbursement from each school for the cost of the Oro Valley provided SRO.
Any discussion about that? Vice Mayor?
So where it talks about approved by the Oro Valley Police Department, is that where we could have a little bit of leeway for the police chief to be determining which schools are most in need, et cetera, and which schools qualify as a school and have a large enough population, et cetera?
Well, is the, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Adding the K-12, the suggestion you had in there kind of cover it, and then it's, because it says it'll be reviewed by the Oro Valley Police Department, and they could, you know, do alternative security. Is it flexible enough? I'll ask the chief.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, yes, that's plenty flexible.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Now, will this policy affect schools moving forward and not impact the schools that are currently covered by Oro Valley SROs, but any new schools coming in are all schools that are currently residing in Oro Valley? Is that was what is your what was your what is your intent?
My intent was would apply to all schools. Now the K-12 schools.
Including the ones that we currently have SROs at?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, any more discussion? So, Councilmember Solomon, could you just restate your amended motion?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I move that Oro Valley adopt the following policy. Every K-12 school in Oro Valley should, one, have the Oro Valley Police Department and Emergency Response Planner annually review and provide input to their security and emergency plans. Number two, have a school resource officer or other alternate security approved by the Oro Valley Police Department. Oro Valley shall request a reimbursement from each school for the cost of the Oro Valley provided SROs.
I second it. Chief, I have a question in regards to other alternative security. So, for example, now, we have school resource officers that have ancillary duties to other schools. Would that be an alternative security measure?
Mr. Mayor, Council, yes, that would be an example of an alternative security measure. The other information is sometimes the private schools have retired police officers that are there, so it just varies on each community.
Thank you. Any more discussion, questions? Councilmember Bong?
Just thank you for raising the level of the emergency response planner in this discussion. I think that's an important function in our town, and I'd really love to see input, not just retroactively, but proactively from this individual. And I know I believe he comes under IT, but that's not a particular area in which we think about talking about the ERP. But I'm really grateful because this is a voice I'm hoping can be heard in future planning for our town. So thank you for raising the profile of this individual in this.
Absolutely.
More discussion? Vice Mayor?
I'd just like to point out that we already have such a wonderful and excellent school resource officer program. And so I just don't want there to be any implication in the public mind or the the police's mind or otherwise that a passage of a policy like this is in any way suggestive that we don't already have a wonderful school resource officer program, because we do. And they're there every day, and there are challenges that they face at our schools, and it means a lot to have the school resource officers so engaged. And we just at the award ceremony saw a school resource officer who's about to retire receiving an award, and it was really neat and touching how involved he was in his elementary school and things. And so I just kind of wanted to comment prior to the vote to reiterate that we already have excellent security, that we already have an excellent police department and an excellent school resource officer program, and we thank you for that.
Thank you so much.
The other, okay. Councilmember Nicholson?
Just going to give a shout out to Anthony Castiglia at Wilson. He's our SO, and I like him. We always do events, and he always helps out then, picks up stuff, and helps us clean up and put tables away, like, way after the event. So
yeah, full transparency, though, he is an Arizona State fan, but that's okay. Yeah.
Okay. So hearing no more discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 6-0. Any future agenda items? Hearing none, I move to adjourn.
Second.
Second by Councilmember Nicholson. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Meeting is adjourned. We'll take a 5-minute break before going into the study session. We'll call the study session to order. Ms. Stein, if you would read item one of the study session.
Discussion regarding the development of a Town of Oro Valley Traffic Standards Plan.
This item was requested by Vice Mayor Barrett and myself. Vice Mayor will speak to this item, followed by Town Engineer and Public Works Director Paul Kiesler, who will make a presentation.
Okay.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just requested this because I thought that there had been a number of times when traffic and level of service standards and intersection standards had come up during recent items. We discussed it as part of our strategic plan as well, and had on our strategic plan bicycle, pedestrian, road safety is kind of the plan item that came from that discussion, but we had some discussion about it as well. And I feel like it would be helpful to have or update some of the standards and plans that we have so that it would just be a little more clear moving forward where in council reports and otherwise this is what the standard is for Oro Valley and or maybe for a traffic engineer who's coming in to do a traffic impact analysis to have those standards kind of clearly set forth. In the general plan, we previous to the current one, as Councilmember Bowen pointed out during the strategic leadership plan, we had mentioned some of those traffic standards. In discussions with our traffic engineer, he's shown me the subdivision street standards that we have, although those sound like they could be in need of an update. And then other cities and towns have things like a transportation access management guidelines, and that helps them talk about, you know, how they're going to design intersections and level of service and things like that. So just in general, I brought this item for us to have an opportunity to discuss and learn a little bit more about what our standards are, how they're currently operating, and maybe hopefully initiate that we could have an update to those and have the staff suggest options for implementing new subdivision street standards and transportation access management guidelines.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Mr. Kiesler?
Mayor, Kelly. Am I on? Okay, sorry, didn't hear myself. Mayor and Council, thank you for the opportunity. I mean, this is, we have standards that we utilize on a regular basis, and many of these standards are old, and it's time for a refresh, and I truly appreciate the opportunity. So I'm going to aid in the discussion, I take a couple minutes just to run through the review of the standards and how we apply the current standards and talk about things that staff has noticed from council with regard to questions and concerns and get kind of a consensus and some direction moving forward. So, start off where we're at. The towns adopted traffic standards are really contained within three main publications. So we have the Oro Valley Subdivision Street Standards, we have the Zoning Code, and we have the Town Code. So you can see they kind of diverged into three different documents. In addition, we also have street requirements within the Floodplain Ordinance, and we also utilize the International Building Codes, primarily for the fire requirements. That's on lengths of turnarounds and driveways and things like that, as well as electric, for signals and things of that nature. The Subdivision Street Standards references local and nationally recognized organizations and publications, and I gave you a big long list in both the council report and the communication for this meeting. And as you can see, I mean, there's just a lot of material there. With all that material, really, on a day-to-day basis, it really kind of boils down to these seven publications and things that we use. So we have the Town of Oro Valley Codes, which I include the Subdivision Street Standards as part of that. So we have the codes, the Town Code, the Zoning Code, the Street Standards. We have the Pima County Design Standards Manual. That's a very good resource for us. We're referring to that all the time. Geometric things, intersection design, things like that. You've heard me on many an occasion quote the Manual Uniform Traffic Control Devices, or the MUTCD. There's the PAG standard specifications and details. This was the old City of Tucson, Pima County standard details that PAG took over. There's the ADOT-TIA guidelines, Highway Capacity Manual, that's the LOS, the level of service is derived from. And then, of course, we have the AASHTO geometric design standards. So that's kind of the bread and butter, boiling down all of that information that I've given to you. These are really what we focus on.
So how do we utilize these standards, even with that abridged list that I just went over? I've really kind of broken it down into five areas. So we look at, and this is a hierarchy. One is more important than five. And just to run through that, safety. Safety is paramount. That's the first thing that we look at. That's warrant analysis, speed studies. It's what we use for traffic control. There's interaction with pedestrians, bicycles, crash analysis. The list goes on, but I think you get the point here. Next is mobility and congestion. And that's where kind of level of service filters into the conversation. The level of service can be a safety aspect as well, particularly for unsignalized intersections, where level of service can be a gauge for somebody making a bad decision. So it's level of service kind of straddles both. There's environmental or development impacts, and that's the, you know, whatever we're doing on the traffic design, on new traffic, or trying to fix old traffic issues, any adverse impacts to the surrounding community. There's the standards themselves. It's the application of the standards and whether those standards fit for the application. Do we need modifications? Lastly is cost to the town, and that's really the funding resources available because all of this takes money to build. There is a very important aspect I want to bring up with regard to cost, and that is the FHWA actually has a kind of a sixth criteria, and that's on the balance of looking at cost-benefit analysis. And we purposely do not utilize cost-benefit analysis. We stick to these five things because if we use a cost-benefit analysis as well, it might ask us to do some, you know, out of that analysis, do something a little bit less. Citizens of Oro Valley deserve better than that, and that's why we stick to these five. To accomplish the points that I just made, you know, how do we, going back to the standards, where would we go? So we start off with the subdivision street standards, the zoning code, and the town code. Now, where those particular manuals do not provide the detail, then we utilize all those many sources that we talked about, particularly concentrating on these, but even when there's something missing here, we'll go into that larger list that I gave you. That's all referenced between the subdivision street standards and the material listed in town code section 7-1. Moreover, you know, just talking generally, for new development, it's generally the public works transportation staff, and I have a very expert transportation staff on board of licensed engineers. Then we also have, aside from development, just general street safety issues. For instance, the Naranja conversations that we've been having lately. We do that through the town's Traffic Safety Committee, and this is an internal committee, and it's a group comprised of cross-departmental staff, planning, legal, engineering, PD, risk management, our safety expert, along with Golden Ranch Fire, to discuss these issues, and we work as a consortium. At the staff, but after all of this is said and done, at the staff level, I, your town engineer, am ultimately responsible for all decisions made, and I'm responsible for the recommendations that come to the town council. However, as the way government works, the council is the final determining body in all of these traffic matters. I do want to bring up one last piece on this, and that is traffic engineering is not an exact science. There is a lot of judgment involved because not everything fits into a nice standard that comes through. You have to adapt to real-world situation. So with that, really, you know, as staff, we've heard council loud and clear. There's been concern over the past few developments that have come forward. I've listed a few here. Level of service, application of the standards, traffic counting, neighborhood impacts, what other jurisdictions are using, methods from other states that we sometimes utilize that are a nationally adopted standard. Crash stats, I didn't put that in this list, but that's another important standard that I know that's been of particular interest for council. the current subdivision street standards, they were first published in 92. They were last updated in 2004. So they're moving on to 20 years old. Given their age and given that we do have this kind of spread out use of or placement of different standards and codes, what a perfect opportunity. And that's where I truly appreciate council bringing me, bringing us the opportunity to bring this forward, to go ahead and do an update to the subdivision street standards. Pull in those items that are of a particular council concern. Congeal all of the important factors that we are really our bread and butter on traffic engineering. Pull it under one document. So with that, I mean, it's kind of a short presentation. It's meant for discussion. These were kind of the things I've heard from council. I'd like to know, have I missed anything? Are there other items that council would like to see included here? And even if it's not something that you can think of right off the top of your head, you know my phone number, you know Chris's phone number, and let us know and let us start working on that update to the subdivision street standards. With that,
questions for Mr. Kiesler?
Direction.
Thank you, Mr. Kiesler, for your presentation. Questions for Mr. Kiesler? Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you, Paul, for your presentation. Could you go back a couple of slides? I had a couple of questions.
Sure. Well, which slide? 1-4?
2-4. One forward from here.
Here.
Yes, at the staff level, it is my understanding you're ultimately responsible for the decisions that are presented to council.
Yes.
Can you describe for us some of the resources that maybe you have in your public works department wherein you can, bounce ideas off of people or, check numbers with people? What do we have available?
Sure. So my main traffic engineer actually has a master's in traffic from Purdue. Most of your engineers who specialize in traffic and traffic alone, I'm a generalist. I know structural, I know earthwork grading, traffic, hydrology, but the people who really concentrate on traffic, they go to a higher education level. We're lucky enough to have one with a master's. Some even go to get a PhD. That is the main person who I rely upon, but we have 4 engineers in CED, and there are 4 licensed engineers in public works, and we actually get together once a week and talk engineering issues, and that's where we bounce these issues off. So it's a wonderful resource for me. I do not feel like I'm hanging out on a limb or I'm coming with a sole opinion to you. It's really a consortium, and we work as a group, and I'm very lucky to have that.
And then regarding engineering judgment, in your view, what's the relationship between engineering judgment and also having the most current data available to you? I think, in talking to me, that's something I feel very, very strongly about.
Sure.
And always an opportunity to go back and check to make sure, do we have the most recent data? How does that work for you?
So, we have to base our decisions off of the most current data that we have available. Now, we do have a wrinkle in the traffic engineering world anyways, and that was the COVID years. So you always build, it's like a layer cake. So you have to have, before you can have anything above, you got to have your base done. You need to know your existing conditions. Well, what we do is we look over history. How has an intersection performed? What are the counts? What's the volume in those intersections? And the problem with the COVID years, which is really 19 through 21, is that traffic was different. So we don't get a good picture. Lately, we've been going backwards, looking at traffic from, roughly 15, 16 through about 18 to 19. And because the town hasn't grown a whole lot over that time frame, it's a decent window to look at. But on some issues, and I'll use the Church of the Nazarene as one, we actually went back and over the past month have done a new count. We're going to compare that count to the original count that was in the original TIA and see how that all gels. So we're working with the applicant's traffic engineer. In fact, we just sent him that data today. And we'll see how that all boils down. And it's going to be a very interesting picture. I've been also watching the PAG counts because the Pima Association of Governments also does a lot of counting throughout town. I mean, through the region in general. And traffic is up and down. It's not just there's been a 3% increase across the board because we've had influx into the region. It varies depending on location. It really does.
And then final question for this round. When we get an external traffic analysis from a professional engineer outside of the town,
yes.
What capacity or capabilities do we have in sort of checking their assumptions and checking the data that they use? Because, you know, in my opinion, a model is something you basically put data into mm-hmm. and you turn a crank and a number comes out. And it's all the data in the model that right. really matters, and that it's put in the right places at the right time. So how do we check the work sure. that comes into us?
So there's two avenues. So CED will assign to their engineers to look at how it interacts with the actual development itself. In public works, I mentioned that that traffic engineering specialist, she actually has staff under her, and what we do is we get the model and we look and we pick the model apart. And we see if we agree with the model. Then what we do is we get together and we compare notes and we look at how the model interacts with the actual development itself. So it's a consortium that we do that. I do have an expert that does actually go through the actual model. There's two main models that are used out there. Synchro is actually the main one, and she's an expert in synchro.
Thank you.
Other questions? Mr. Kiesler, did you have questions, Councilmember John Zivey? No, okay. Mr. Kiesler, you list in one of the frames seven different codes and standards that the town utilizes. Of those seven, one is specific to the town of Oro Valley, and that's the subdivision street standards. So do we use the subdivision street standards? Are they applicable, for example, for Tangerine? Would we use the subdivision street standards for Tangerine?
So the subdivision street standards, it's a little bit of a misnomer. There's data in here with regard to utilizing site visibility triangles. That's one thing that's actually contained within the subdivision street standards. Now, the dimensions of an intersection, the subdivision street standards actually allows us to reference Pima County. So we'll use Pima County's guide. In fact, I brought them with me. The subdivision street standards are very general. They're very, very general. They are focused on subdivision development. There's a little bit of commercial in there. The preamble does state that when you do have an arterial or collector, you want to utilize the reference standards that they have. And that's where we go. Pima County really does have the best standards in the region that we utilize for that.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yeah, along those lines on the question just asked by the mayors, the subdivision street standards, when you're designing subdivision, as Paul said, they're general, but that's where you go to get 99% of your information to do your initial designs. That'll tell you what radiuses you need to have in the roads for turns. It'll tell you what type of cross slope you need for drainage on your street, whether it's crowned or if it's sloped. It tells you the length of street you can have before you're required to have an intersection or a turnaround because of fire and safety. It'll give you information on the fact that, believe it or not, Pima County Sewer has a lot of authority over your street and where the manholes are and the turnarounds for their trucks for maintenance. Rough intersection designs, as you said. I mean, you get into other things. It tells you about your sidewalks, what type of curbs you need to have, your right-of-way parking, particularly in residential. Commercial, you know, the size of the parking spaces, how many spaces before you have to have a landscaped island, that you need a drop-off point, you need trash areas and the dimensions of the trash areas and, you know, whether they're screened or not, that you need a bicycle parking area and storage area. So I can tell you, as far as from a development perspective, yeah, the Town of Orange Street Standards pretty much has 99% of what you need to start the development design to get to the preliminary reviews. And then, of course, we turn it over to the engineers like, you know, Paul, to really work out and make sure the grading is right. And I would agree with them that, you know, they're saying from 2004, and I don't think the standards have really changed that much, but, you know, to take a second look at it, make sure they clarify the language and all. But I know that our current street standards, you know, has quite a bit of information, and it is one of the documents when we say we require more of development in Oro Valley than other jurisdictions do, that's true when you look at those that manual.
Councilmember Nicholson. Thank you, Councilmember Solomon.
What about parking standards? I know, like, parking standards have been the same since, like, 1950s or 60s. Like, you know, if you go to Target or whatever or Walmart, mm-hmm. like, 80% of the spaces are empty. Like, have you seen a shift in that in the United States at all as far as changing those standards at all, or are we looking at that? Or?
Well, the town has actually changed its standards over the years. Now, the parking standards are not within the subdivision street standards. It's actually the zoning code. We used to require angle parking, and I think the current actually took that requirement away. So now you have the option to do an angled, or you could do 90-degree parking, which adds much more flexibility. And I believe the parking code was updated, what, a year ago? Somewhere around there? But, you know, as Councilmember Solomon was mentioning, he mentioned a lot of different aspects. Some of those aspects are actually in the zoning code. I lumped them together as the subdivision street standards. But, again, to get them all under one publication so that you don't have to fish for answers, I think it's a really good idea. I think it really is. I think that, you know, there's basics that we wouldn't change in here. But there's, I've, again, heard loud and clear from council, a level of service is something you really want us to dive into. When we'll dive into that level of service, the analysis of accidents. There was the one per million. And what does that mean? What does a one per million accident mean of vehicles travel through an intersection? Well, depending on the volume of the intersection, that could mean one accident every 2 to 6 months. That's that threshold. But we look at that on an individual basis. That's where engineering judgment comes in. You know, this is our bread and butter. Traffic is our bread and butter. That's why we have to utilize our judgment as well, instead of not blindly applying code and looking at all aspects.
Councilmember Jones Ivey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Paul, during one of our previous council meetings, we were talking about the grading of roads. Through A through, I think it was F or something like that.
Yes.
Where does that come from? What code? And
so
how is that decided?
Yep. That's the Highway Capacity Manual, and that's part of the FHWA. And the Highway Capacity Manual has that determination of level of service. So level of service really is, I don't want it to be simplified as to look at a paper you got in school. Level of service really boils down to categories of timing delay. And that's at intersections. Then level of service for mainline roads, that's a level of congestion. You know, how free-flowing is that traffic? Where A is completely free-flowing, F, you can get standing traffic on a road, depending on the time. And what we're talking about is really what the interactions at your peak hours.
Okay, thank you for helping me understand that.
Sure.
Vice Mayor.
Okay, thank you. So in the write-up, there's listed 27 different standards plus 6 more, and then it says, in the event a conflict arises between 2 or more references above, the town engineer shall determine the reference to be applied. And that's where I understand that there is going to need to be judgment applied here. But for me, I feel like it would be helpful if we had kind of an update and a policy, and then it could become more clear. This is an area where our policy says this, mm-hmm. but due to these factors, we feel that the judgment requires this, for example. So I feel like that would be helpful instead of having 27 standards where, you know, the council doesn't really right. know where to look or et cetera. So that's one reason for my request. And then also, I think, as opposed to the subdivision street standards, like what Councilmember Solomon was talking about, I think I'm more interested in the transportation kind of access management guidelines, like the Pima County roadway design standards and, mm-hmm. you know, the level of service, the safety. I'm also interested in taking a look at the spacing of intersections, what's an appropriate spacing for different types of intersections to have from other types of intersections. You know, there's lights, there's coming out of a neighborhood, turning onto a street, there's right. coming into a new subdivision. So, and part of the reason I think this would be helpful for us to take a look at now is because a lot of the projects that we're looking at are going to be infill development. So mm-hmm. as we do some of that infill development, I think it would be helpful to... Right. to update that and have some of that available. So that, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Other questions? Councilmember Bowen.
And thank you, Paul. If we were ever in a situation where the town of Oro Valley Subdivision street standards zoning, street standards needed an update because you saw a persistent problem all over town or you saw the inability to continue to do things the way we've been doing them in the past, would you feel comfortable coming to us with a request to change these standards?
Of course, I always feel comfortable coming to council asking for anything. I've asked for budget adjustments. We're here as a team and we work together. I can say, and this, I think, piggybacks onto what the vice mayor was just saying, Mayor Councilmember Bowen, I think we could do, as staff, I think we could do a better job outlining in the actual council and P&Z communications when we have to make those judgment calls, why we make those judgment calls, and what the specifics of that are. I think there's an opportunity for us to do better. I think, you know, as I talk with my colleagues, we have become accustomed to these documents. We've become accustomed. We know where all the hidden pieces are that we need to utilize as resources to do this. But we, you know, I think this discussion brings to light that understanding that it's not just the eggheads looking at this. It's the community. And that, I think, is why, you know, I haven't brought it forward before, but I'm appreciative of council bringing this up, and we bring it forward. And I think there's clarity that can be added for everybody.
Pardon me, I really appreciate that. Yes, it was almost rhetorical because my personal view on this and living in the town 8 years, I think the civil engineers have done a good job. I don't see design standards that cause problems for people. But I view my role as a council person as focusing on something like LOS because that's where council responsibilities kind of come together for me.
Sure.
We're talking about resident concerns. We're talking about land use, we're talking about safety, and we're talking about the need to generate revenue in the town. And I think land use issues impact all of those, and sure. that's why they're so difficult to make. It's so difficult to make those decisions. So I wanted to mention the council. Why do I press so much on LOS? Because I think that's exactly the area where council should be focusing. I may ask tough questions to the engineer. Maybe my questions are too tough or too detailed for some. But really, my focus, I think, has to be on where we make decisions. Sure. And I find, and I've been thinking about this all week, I find LOS to be a very powerful metric for council because it really does help the people that I represent. And that's what they seem to care about. And I don't think it was an accident that LOS was in the previous general plan. I think it's just a really good metric for council, and that's where I'll be focusing. And I just wanted to give my compliments to your engineering staff. I don't think that standards from 2004 are necessarily inapplicable right now, that we've done a good job. And if the problems were there, in 20 years, we would have already seen them.
Right.
So thank you for sharing the engineering aspects of this, but I'll continue to focus on LOS because I think that's what matters for council. Thank you.
Sure.
Other questions? Okay. Paul, you feel like you have enough direction?
I think I have the direction right now. It's a lot of work ahead of us. This is not something we'll turn around immediately, but we will start wholeheartedly on this. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, thank you for the council report. Thank you for the presentation. Appreciate it. And the work of your staff. We'll call the study session to a close. And so we're adjourned. Good night, everyone. Thank you.